Welcome to Local Talk concerning our COVID-19 response on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people's stories and events in Central Iowa. Good to get together again to provide facts to our community through Zoom technology and the spoken word. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarb. I'm your host for the hour. And my good friend and neighbor, Mike Metz of Milford Township and Keeper of the Prairie Wind Prairie. Hi, Mike.
Hello, Pat. And today is Abe Lincoln's birthday from 1809, a little cabin in Kentucky.
Great to have you sharing your honesty with us that you picked up from Abe Lincoln, I'm sure. And because we are the heart of Iowa, Anna Magnuson, a.k.a. Anna Banana, is here with her heart-to-heart messages from KHOI. Hi, Anna. Yes, it is. Hey, don't go away. We'll look forward to another heart-to-heart message later in the hour. And today through Zoom, we will be joined later by Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Mary Rankin, Sustainability Coordinator with the Iowa State University and the City of Ames, with her monthly installment, as it is the second Friday of the month. The weather will, in a word, be cold today, with little snow at times accumulating another inch, breezy with some drifting occurring, -5 tonight, high of 2 tomorrow, -10 overnight, highs of -4 and -5 Sunday, with a low of -19. And it looks like we might get up to double digit 15 degrees by Wednesday or Thursday. So bundle up, listeners. Now let's welcome Dennis Hart, a master at gathering the news from this week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The coronavirus just kept making big news around Ames this past week, as it has for so many weeks and so many months now. Let's begin with last Friday, when the Trib reported that 31 more cases of the virus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 9,100 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 6%. Around the state, the death toll from the coronavirus exceeded 5,000. The Trib also reported that Mainstream Living, a program that serves people with intellectual disabilities and mental illnesses in Ames and Des Moines, had vaccinated more than half its 450 residents and 500 employees against the coronavirus. 70% of its staff members said they wanted to get the vaccine. The Trib also reported that the search for a new superintendent in the Gilbert School District had been narrowed to 3 candidates. The current superintendent, Lindsay Beecher, is retiring at the end of this school year. The new superintendent would start work by July 1st. All 3 finalists for the job are either current superintendents or assistant superintendents. Interviews with the finalists will take place on campus February 17th and will include tours of the district and the community. After those interviews, the school board will meet to receive feedback and then select the new superintendent. The Trib also reported that a new dental clinic would open at Primary Health Care in Ames. It will specialize in treating Story County residents who are not insured or not covered by Medicaid. One full-time dentist, along with hygienists and dental assistants, will provide care in the clinic, which will be connected to the existing medical clinic at 3510 Lincoln Way. The clinic is expected to open March 17th. And, of course, there was a story about the snowstorm that blew through Ames last Thursday, bringing with it extremely low temperatures that persisted around these parts all this week. The snow made driving dangerous on many roads. Ames police reported responding to 4 vehicle crashes. Ames schools held a remote learning day last Thursday. Saturday's paper reported that the coronavirus had claimed another life in Story County. That brought to 42 the number of people in the county who had died from the virus. The paper also reported that another 28 cases of the virus had been confirmed in the county, bringing to 9,128 the total number of people in Story County who have been infected since the pandemic began last year. This, as the Trib's website reported, that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds had decided to lift the state's limited mask requirement, effective last Sunday, along with social distancing requirements and other coronavirus mitigation measures that she had put in place for businesses and social gatherings. She strongly encouraged Iowans, businesses, and organizations to take reasonable health measures consistent with guidance from the state's health department. A news release from Reynolds' office did not explain why she was relaxing the restrictions. The Trib also reported that the governor had said that Iowa is not getting as many doses of the coronavirus vaccine as many other states, and that's why Iowa has one of the lowest vaccination rates in the nation. There was also word that more than 16.5 million visitors had stopped at Iowa state parks last year. That was a record number of people. Experts said state residents turned to the outdoors after the coronavirus had interrupted or canceled indoor activities. Iowa has 83 state parks and forests. Sunday's Trib reported that staff members in the Ames School District had started receiving coronavirus vaccine shots at the district's first vaccine clinic on Friday. County public health workers gave the shots. About 100 people were able to get vaccinated. About 675 people had signed up with the district to get the shots. The goal is to give at least 100 doses every Friday for the district. As the vaccinations of staff of other school districts in the county are completed, there will be an effort to offer at least 2 clinics a week for the Ames District. The Collins-Maxwell District was scheduled to have staff vaccinations this past Tuesday. Roland Story was next in line with a scheduled Wednesday vaccination clinic, followed on Thursday by the staff of the Colo-Nesco District. Ballard is scheduled for February 17th. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had finished 3 days of budget hearings last week and would make final budget decisions for the upcoming fiscal year this past Tuesday. Hotel-motel industry losses because of the coronavirus pandemic meant lost revenue for the city's operating budget and had what was called a devastating effect on the city's Convention and Visitors Bureau. Residents will have a property tax decrease and a hike in the city's water utility rate. And there was word that Iowa State University's Assistant Director of Multicultural Student Affairs had just released her first book. It's a contemporary romance novel whose title is How to Fail at Flirting, and it was written by Denise Williams Klotz. Tuesday's Trib brought word that one man had died and 24 other people were evacuated in an apartment fire in downtown Boone on Sunday. When firefighters arrived at 814 8th Street, flames were coming from a fifth-floor apartment on the south side of the six-story building. Firefighters found the body of 66-year-old Michael Kreis. Some of the 24 residents were moved to a motel with help from the Salvation Army and the American Red Cross. The Boone Homeless Fund asked for donations to help the fire victims get affordable housing. There was also word that another person had died from the coronavirus in Story County. That brought to 43 the number of residents in the county who had died from the virus. And the Trib reported that another 38 cases of the virus had been confirmed in the county, and that brought the total number of coronavirus infections to 9,166 in the county since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate was 6%. Meanwhile, Iowa State University reported 39 more coronavirus cases in the university community in the week ending this past Sunday. That included 35 students and 4 faculty and staff members. The Trib also reported on the number of coronavirus cases in area school districts. The Ames School District reported fewer than 6 positive cases among students in the preschool and elementary school buildings, fewer than 6 in the middle school, and fewer than 6 in the high school. In Ballard, the school district reported 10 students had tested positive. Gilbert reported that 12 students had tested positive in that district. And in both the Nevada and Roland Story districts, no students were said to have tested positive in recent days. There was also word that Story County leaders were reminding residents to continue to follow the county's mask mandate and other coronavirus mitigation strategies, in spite of Governor Reynolds' decision to roll back mask and gathering rules last weekend. The governor had ordered that the state's mask mandate and other social distancing measures for bars, restaurants, casinos, fitness centers, and other establishments be lifted starting last Sunday. Story County Board of Health Chairman John Passion called it the wrong thing to do. He said this was not the time to back off from mitigation measures, and that the emphasis needs to be, in his words, not getting back to normal, but for people to stop dying. Mask mandates in both the city of Ames and around Story County remain in effect. And one more note from Tuesday's paper, word that Iowa State University football coach Matt Campbell had agreed to a new contract with the university, one that will keep him as coach through the year 2028. Campbell led the Cyclones to their most successful football season in history last year with a Big 12 championship game appearance and a Fiesta Bowl championship. Terms of the new deal were not announced, but Campbell earned an average of $3.5 million a year during his previous contract, which ran through 2025. Wednesday's Trib reported that 17 more cases of the coronavirus had been confirmed in Story County. That brought the total number of cases in the county to 9,183. The county's 14-day positivity rate stayed at 6%. The Trib also had word that the Ames School District had vaccinated 114 staff members at the district's first coronavirus vaccination clinic last Friday. That was 17% of the 657 staff members who had registered to receive their vaccinations through the district. Another district vaccination clinic is scheduled for today. There was also a report that all staff members in the Boone School District who had signed up for vaccinations there had received their first doses of the coronavirus vaccine, Employees there will receive their second doses in a few weeks. And Wednesday, word that the Gilbert School District would move to a 5-day in-person teaching schedule starting next week. This after Governor Reynolds signed a bill requiring school districts to offer 100% in-person learning options. Thursday's paper, yesterday's, reported that 25 more coronavirus cases had been confirmed in Story County, bringing the total number of positive cases to 9,208 since the pandemic started. The county's 14-day positivity rate had gone up from 6 to 7%. The Trib also reported that more than 80% of the city's police and fire department members had received their first dose of the coronavirus vaccine. The paper also had word that the wrong-way driver in an accident that killed an Ames waitress, her 11-year-old son, and her boyfriend had been charged with 6 counts of vehicular homicide, 3 for driving while under the influence, and 3 more for driving recklessly. 25-year-old Spencer Boltman is accused in the deaths of Christy Gutierrez, her son Jesse, and her boyfriend Mario Zubia. The Trib also reported that the Ames City Council had wrapped up its budget process, upping funding for the arts, and discussing a funding cut for the county's volunteer center. The new budget will go into effect July 1st. And the Trib reported that a new store was planning to open yesterday in the Duff Plaza shopping area in Ames. Home Goods is at 1505 Buckeye Avenue. It sells such things as furniture, rugs, lighting, kitchen and dining accessories, bedding, pet accessories, and more. The store is expected to employ about 65 full-time and part-time employees. And that is your summary of another consequential week of news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, thanking you for listening, and promising to return right back here to this same virtual seat on Monday, when I'll report on what's been making news around Iowa. Between now and then, let's make a deal. Let's both try to have a safe and healthy weekend.
Thank you, Dennis Hart, for the week in the news, and your craft is so much appreciated. And the music interlude was a snippet from our Chinese New Year music file. So now let's learn more about the Chinese New Year from Ursula Rudenberg.
So Kay Han came to Ames about 20 years ago. She is a physicist and microelectronics researcher and has worked at Iowa State University and the Ames Lab. She was born and raised in the southwestern part of China.
I asked her to describe the region where she came from. She described growing up in what was not only a remote and beautiful part of the country, but also a historic and unique time, the Cultural Revolution.
Mountainous, and it's beautiful. It's beautiful. And before, because of the traffic restrictions, it's kind of like a very hard to access and poor. But now because the transportation's improved a lot and the highways and the airplanes, so the province become tourist attraction and recently and very, very beautiful.
Like these Chinese paintings where they're very kind of unique mountains that kind of stand alone.
Yeah.
Very steep.
Yeah. Okay. I grew up in the city and I went to the countryside, one of those mountain places during the Cultural Revolution time.
And what did you do in the mountains?
Farming. After graduating from high school, Cultural Revolution, which Mao invented. And then college, you were just sent to those places and to be re-educated, which is labor work and and like I was 15, 16 years old. And
you went by yourself?
I went by myself.
And where did you live?
I lived with the family.
A local family?
Local family, villagers. And that was required by government.
Did you make friends?
Oh, a lot of friends, the whole village. They were friends.
Did you like the family that you lived with?
I do. Nice people and get to know them so well. And you lived in their life, in their shoe. Every month because I was from city and the government had some supplements like meat and something else every month, monthly supplies. These were basically very limited. And every month at that time, the family host and just cook that and the whole village like come to enjoy it because it was very, very poor.
And what kind of work did you do?
Growing rice in the rice field, wheat field, depend on the season.
How long were you required to do that?
2 years. Was after two and a half years, I came back to city and worked in the TV station. And then at the time, the college reopened.
Was there anything about that time that you feel that you gained something?
I gained a lot.
What did
I
think gain from it?
The perspectives of hardworking people, less privileged people, and appreciation of everything. I can remember personal experience. And I got to enjoy the beautiful thing. I was very nearsighted during high school, and I was good at the time. My vision was good at the time.
Your vision improved?
It improved a lot because I didn't read or study.
Oh, so you looked at beautiful mountains.
Beautiful mountains and the rice field, wheat field.
I asked Kay how she remembers the New Year celebrations. In the farm village where you were, did they eat anything special or did
they saved all the year just for the time?
And what did they save?
The eggs, chicken, or a little bit like meat because that time was very, very poor time and the resources are so limited.
How did you celebrate New Year's Eve as a child in your family?
Chinese New Year, kind of like, I think, kind of like Thanksgiving and Christmas combined here. Thanksgiving is family gathering time, so is Chinese New Year. So whenever you are, you just go back. You cook the best meal, and they will make dumplings.
Dumplings.
Yeah. And
is a dumpling considered a festive food?
Very much, yeah.
So it's not an everyday food that you eat?
No, no. Dumplings like kind of represent happiness, and also you have time there together to make it while making it and chatting and sharing.
And what did you put in the dumplings?
For meat and with the spices and and something for fun, like you put something special in there, like a coin or something.
In the dumpling?
In the dumpling. And then whoever fetched it has it and is supposed to be the luckiest person for the year.
So you would have dinner together?
Dinner together all night.
All night?
So from afternoon to the midnight.
So you
like
would just
that.
Have different courses?
It's like always eating, always chatting. And then like 10 p.m. say, oh, what should we eat? I'm kind of hungry. Oh, let's make some desserts.
So you hang out?
They hang out, yeah.
And and what do you do while you're hanging out?
Chatting, playing cards. That was my time. Now people do a lot more like singing and watching TV.
So New Year's Eve is a time for
New
family.
New Year's Eve, basically like family, yeah.
And do you go out after eating? Do you have fireworks? Or?
Yeah. In the big city, like they have fireworks, really intensive and much beautiful than we had here.
Here,
in Ames.
Better.
Yeah, much, much, much better.
What makes them better?
The grand level.
Are they more artistic?
Yeah, artistic and more dramatic.
They fire more at the same time?
A lot more in the beautiful sky lighting.
And then, okay, so that's New Year's Eve?
That's New Year's Eve.
And then what happens? And then it lasts for a few days, right?
It's Chinese New Year usually festive, kind of like from New Year's Eve to 15th. It's 15th is kind of like a conclusion of the festive.
So what happens during those days?
After Chinese New Year's Eve, after like a first day, it's usually it's like visiting friends, visiting other relatives, and older people, they give the red bag, small little red bag to younger generation, especially kids, just for the happiness.
And what's in the red bag?
It's money. Yeah, just money. And
so the children keep the money?
Children keep the money. Or they just run out to buy some candy or firecrackers right away with the money. it's just like a happiness, and you like to see kids are so happy at the time, and also the older people, they are so fulfilling of the giving, you know, at the time, satisfaction, the happiness for the older generation, especially grandparents or great-grandparents. You do shopping, you eating, not that formally, but very relaxedly.
Do you have any particular New Year memory yourself when you think of the Chinese New Year?
When I grew up, it was a very difficult time in China. So Chinese New Year time was the time kids got a pair of new shoes or a new clothes. That was a very happy time.
So you remember getting things that you wanted.
Yeah.
So how do you celebrate Chinese New Year here in the United States with your family?
We actually don't because that time always, for many years, and we always not together. Kids are always not here. And my husband and I, two people, we were very simple. And
you and your husband don't do anything?
I cannot think of anything very special like we can do to celebrate the Chinese New Year. So we always like have a few friends together.
And have a small party?
Have a small party type, like a gathering. That's about it.
And during this period, these 15 days, do you think about it? Or
no.
But
because this time is so unique here, it's a school time, it's working time. So it was not too easy to even go back to China to be with family. So after my parents passed away, basically Chinese New Year is not on my calendar. I plan to go back in Chinese New Year. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, farming was the basic activities. So during the Chinese New Year time, it was after the whole year of hard work and the harvest, and this is a time to enjoy the hard working year and relax and prepare for next year. Spring come and then another year comes, and it was very very treasurable. Time. And now, because the society is so much different than before, especially in the city. For example, we made the dumplings, family time, made the dumplings together, family activity, actually chatting, laughing, eating. But now, especially in city, you can buy all kinds of dumplings from store. And it's so much easier, but it doesn't feel, at least I feel that way. You don't feel like that personal anymore. It's just not fun anymore, I think, that part.
In speaking with Kay, I came to appreciate her as a person who had not only transformed large historic events that might leave one bitter, like the Cultural Revolution, into personal and deeper appreciation for humanity, but also someone whose life embodies huge change, economic, geographic, and culturally. So I was really curious about what she saw as her legacy, her children, and the history she wanted to pass on to them. So I asked her a little bit about that. What do you think that you took from the family life you had as a child? What did you carry with you to your children?
Very interestingly, my children, oftentimes, when I ask them even before they actually make money or whatever, and then when I ask them if you need money, if you need anything or whatever, they always say, don't worry, we're okay. You guys were okay during the Cultural Revolution. How can we not be okay?
What does that mean?
Cultural Revolution was a very hard time. They feel like they are so much more fortunate than our time at their age.
So they have a respect for what
they had very good, great respect for what our journey was, and then they kind of carried the good part of it. I never say anything to them directly about anything like that. But they kind of picked up this kind of parents' life journey.
Thank you, Kay Han and Ursula Rudenberg. And as it's the Chinese New Year, it's the Year of the Ox.
Phenology is recording nature's happenings when they occur. The first bluebird of spring or the last antlered buck of winter are noted in a journal for future reference and comparisons from year to year. Today's phenology is about oxen, since it is the Year of the Ox in our Chinese New Year. There's a reason for the popular saying, as strong as an ox. These powerful beasts can outpull a big team of horses. In fact, while a team of oxen can pull its own body weight at a walking pace, for short bursts of 6 to 8 feet, a well-trained team of oxen can pull up to twice their body weight, or as much as 12 to 13,000 pounds. For millennia, oxen also could pull heavier loads because of the use of the yoke, which was designed to work best with the neck and shoulder anatomy of cattle. Until the invention of the horse collar, which allowed the horse to engage the pushing power of its hind quarters in moving a load, horses could not pull with their full strength because the yoke was incompatible with their anatomy. Yokes press on their chest, inhibiting their breathing. Well-trained oxen are also considered less excitable than horses. Pairs of oxen were always hitched the same way, and they were often given paired names. It was traditional to call the near side, the left, or the haw side ox of a pair by a single syllable name, and the off side, the right, or the G side one by a longer one. For example, Lark and Lynette, or Turk and Tiger. So its binary naming system was one syllable name on the left, Hank, and two syllables to the right as Lucy. And that's our phonology for today about oxen. I'm Pat Schlarbaum with KHOI Community Radio. Become a member or find the donate button at khoifm.org.
And you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on Local Talk, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. So, Mike Metz, are you planning to assist in the great backyard bird count?
Yes, I am. I've got my pencil sharpened and clipboard with paper in hand.
And when does that begin? And tell us a little about that.
Well, it actually starts today. And the idea is that you're observing and making notes on the birds that you see in your backyard over a four-day period.
And you have an upcoming guest on Tuesday?
Yes, we're going to be talking to Doug Haar, the president of the Audubon Council, and he's going to give us an update on what was found and maybe a little bit more history behind that count.
So I guess all it takes is 15 minutes to make a difference.
That's right. So you can spend 15 minutes or beyond.
Okay. Of any of those 4 days, is there a website you can share?
I don't have a specific one, but I know they can go to Audubon or they can go to the Cornell, who are the hosts of that. Also, Story County Conservation, there's a link there as well.
Okay, great. And anything happening in the Ollie world?
Oh, sure. Ollie is coming up, and next Thursday we have an orientation, and I got a chance to talk with Sam Wormley about that.
Sam, what is OLLI?
OLLI is an acronym for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Iowa State. OLLI is one of maybe 120, 123 programs around the country. Each one of them is endowed, associated with a university, and its purpose is to give lifelong learning opportunities to its members.
It's open to anyone over 50, is that correct?
I don't think anybody cards anybody. It's open to pretty much everybody. You just need to look like you're over 50. The whole point is that it's meant to serve, and maybe overlapping a little bit, as people end their work careers and move into retirement. Here's an opportunity for them to keep learning in a semi-structured situation. They don't have to take tests. They don't have to memorize anything. They just enjoy soaking up the information and learning.
And there's the opportunity to interact with other individuals.
That's right. That really makes a class to have the participation of the students. I really hate to call them students. I'm just going to call them participants. They make a class come to life.
When I started taking the classes, I found them invaluable. It added to my knowledge. And that OLLI program led to where I am an instructor. So this gives folks who take classes an opportunity to become instructors in the future.
That's right. There are so many people out there with expertise in their own right of things that they've learned, parts of their careers, and sharing that with other people through the OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute program, is really outstanding. The open house is Thursday. It's the 18th for spring classes.
Sam, where would people go to find out about how to get involved in OLLI?
People can go to olli.iastate.edu. They will find all the information about the OLLI program, how to get involved, how to take classes, and so on.
There is a course catalog for the spring, what the course covers.
There's an online version of the course catalog at olli.iastate.edu, and you can download a PDF copy of that in case you want to print it out or peruse it on your computer. You can sign up for courses. They make it easy because you can go to olli.iastate.edu to do the sign up, to gather the information, and to find out a lot more.
All right, Sam. Thank you.
You're welcome, Mike.
Yeah, thank you, Sam Wormley and Mike Metz. And in our quest to strengthen our community through communication that includes Zoom, let's welcome Susan Guiasta, Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames, and Mary Rankin, Sustainability Coordinator for Iowa State University and the City of Ames. Welcome.
Good to see you.
Aha, great to have you with us. It's the second Friday, Mary Rankin.
It is. It's great to see everyone in this chilly, brisk winter morning.
Well, Susan, how's it going at the city offices? Any updates?
It's going very well. We had a bit of a sprinkling of snow yesterday that I think came a little bit out of nowhere. So streets are slick and people need to remember to slow down. Just a reminder that city offices will be closed on Monday for President's Day. I know that's one that sort of catches people off guard, but we are available on our website. And of course, our essential services, our utilities, and our police and fire department will still be operating like usual.
Enjoy that catch-up day on Monday. Busy time of year, isn't it?
It is.
Well, Mary, great to have you with us. You've got some topics. I'm really interested in the rummage rampage that I see as one of your topics today. You want to start there?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So we're looking forward to spring, to summer, and to events that we are currently planning. And we are absolutely assuming are going to happen as usual. So last year, we weren't able to do our Rummage Rampage event for very good reasons, of course, COVID considerations. But this year, we are planning to have that event. And we'll see how it goes, of course. We'll be mindful as the times require. But right now, we do have that planned. And we have it on our calendars, so we hope all the listeners get it on their calendars.
So basically, as people are finding implements and things kind of in their way this winter, you can set it aside. And the Rummage Rampage is a great destination for those items.
That is exactly right, Pat. Yeah. There's actually three ways to support Rummage Rampage. And the first of those is to donate. And so you mentioned things that were getting in the way this winter. I have things getting in my way from last winter that are put into a corner in my basement just waiting for Rummage Rampage.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, they've been there all year.
That's right. But we take, you know, anything at this event that people are finding that they no longer need related to having an apartment, having a house. So we have outdoor items, we have kitchen supplies, we have furniture, we have carpet. There's only a few items that we actually don't take. And many of them that we take, we're actually gathering to donate to local causes that can be benefited by them. You know, cleaning supplies and old towels and old linens and those sorts of things, as well as books, go to different entities within our community. But then we offer for sale all these wonderful items and we mark them to sell. So people can get some really great deals. A lot of items have a lot of good life in them. People just no longer necessarily need them, but somebody else can really benefit from them.
And the timing of this is kind of when the students are shifting their lives, when a lot of things become available. Is it designed for around the students?
Yes, that's correct.
Transitions, yeah.
Right. We've tried to be really strategic that way in looking at that time frame when the leases are ending for apartments and the new leases are beginning. So that time when everybody has all that stuff that they're trying to decide if they need when they're moving out. And then the time when people are moving in and saying, oh, my gosh, I do need an extra sofa or five that maybe I need for my apartment. Yeah. So, right. So the dates actually for this year's event that we're planning are Friday, July 30th through Saturday, August 7th. And so that hits the end of the month and the beginning, the move-in of August.
And it'll be a different Ames, Iowa, before and after. And hopefully by then, a lot of our cautionary restrictions will be kind of taken care of, COVID-wise.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's a really panicky time for a lot of students. Yeah. What we are seeing at that time of the year is if you drive around Ames at the end of July, you see a lot of really potentially usable, useful items stuck on curbsides. And we really want to avoid that last minute panic where items that could find a second home instead end up in a landfill. That's just not good for anybody.
Yeah.
So there's so many benefits to an event like this that, you know, helps our community recycle, keeps it clean. Once those items make it to the curb and then there's a good rainfall, sometimes those items now are ruined. And so instead, we really want people to be a little bit more strategic in their plans for moving out, take advantage of this opportunity to get rid of a lot of stuff in a one-stop shop, to drop off your books, drop off your housewares, you know, get in your car and you're gone, you're leaving Ames, that's fine. Your items will find a second home somewhere else.
Well, Mary Rankin, I'm curious, your tenure with the city, is this one of your major accomplishments in your coordination role as a sustainability director?
I can never take full credit for this. Absolutely not. Something that I have been very proud and very honored to be a part of. I think it is a great event that has started. I have been able to be a part of that team that, you know, got it off the ground. So I think it is one of definitely, what do I want to say? It's an event that's planned year round pretty much. And it's an event that depends upon so many people and so many entities and really brings our community together in such a unique way. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It just hits all the buttons as far as what a progressive community can offer in the form of less trash going to the landfill and people utilizing very valuable items that, you know, with their time constraints, they have to move along. But a lot of their items can be recycled and repurposed. And it's just a great, great program.
I would give you just a couple pieces of numbers as we then move on, because we've got other events to talk about. But Susan mentioned keeping items out of the landfill. The last year we did this, which was in 2019, we actually kept 58 tons of material out of the landfill. And another way I mentioned to get involved is to volunteer. All of the proceeds from this event go to the nonprofit organizations that volunteer at our event and provide hours. So we give all of those proceeds back to these nonprofits based upon the percentage of hours that they have volunteered. And the last year we did this, over $33,000 was distributed amongst 22 organizations within our community, including very own KHOI Community Radio.
Absolutely. Boy, thanks to all those folk that chip in at a very useful and worthwhile program. So, excuse me, Susan, did you have some one of
the... No, I was going to mention, like Mary did, the three ways to get involved: donate, volunteer, or shop. So we covered them all.
Okay. Okay. Stash the Trash. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Stash the Trash is our springtime cleanup event in our community. And we did have this last year, but we had it in a very voluntary, individually driven, you know, as an individual could get out and clean up in your community. And we are going to continue in that manner again this year, just to be cognizant of our precautions that we're still being very mindful of. And we are once again having it in a two-day fashion, allowing people to go out as it's convenient for them in their neighborhoods and do some cleanup. And so this year's event is currently scheduled for April 9th through 10th. I say currently because I don't know if we have a freak blizzard that, you know, is maybe predicted, we'll look at shifting that. But that's what we've got on our calendar right now. And we will once again have a trash dumpster out in Ryman Garden parking lot. So as people clean up, they can bring their trash to those locations. We'll also have a pickup as we've had in the past. And we will also have the ability for individuals to come and get cleanup supplies. We just won't be having the, you know, bringing everybody together luncheon event, unfortunately, this year. We're hoping for next year, but this year we're going to continue to be cautious. But this is such a great opportunity to get out, do a little cleanup, bring that shine to our community, getting us all set for graduation and then all the new students coming in for orientation to start the next year. So this is such a point of pride for our community, and we really want people to get it on your calendars, make a point to go out and clean up around your area.
April 9th and 10th, no snow.
Okay. That's right.
Okay. And something I'm going to look forward to assisting with again this year with KHOI is the Fresh Air Eco Fair during Earth Day.
That was the next thing on my list. Yeah. We are super excited to do that online presence celebrating Earth Day with wonderful folks at KHOI and all of those in our community supporting sustainability, taking care of our planet in many unique ways. So yeah, Susan and I are just starting to brainstorm, but we've got some pretty creative ideas, to add even more connection to our wonderful, bountiful planet and celebrating all that it provides us every day.
Well, it certainly was a pleasure assisting with your outreach last year. And it was quite frankly, you know, for somebody who appreciates the environment, you folks really, really brought it to the Ames community, and really looking forward to, it was an adaptation. You know, nobody thought that we'd be trying to put all the presentations out virtually, but in the end, I think it worked. So we'll have that to look forward to. And that's going to be on Earth Day weekend. That's April 24th this year, okay? Sure. And you've been working with the climate action planning process. Susan, you've mentioned this. How are things proceeding?
So we're at the point now where we're seeking a consultant. We want to be advised by a group that has been through this before. We want to have a professional, reasonable, attainable plan. And so we are evaluating RFPs right now as we speak. They're due next week. And then we will bring in some firms to interview. But we really feel that while Mary has a lot of expertise in this area and we have a lot of utility expertise, we need some guidance in creating a really top-notch plan. And of course, community input will be a major component of this. And one of the things we're evaluating these firms on is how robust is their community input process. We're looking at establishing a community input task force to assist. So, and we're looking at many opportunities throughout this, what we think will be an 18-month process for people to get involved, because we need to have that ownership and feedback.
I was just sort of musing in the back of my mind. I think, Mary Rankin, you might have still been with the Department of Natural Resources, and there was a climate action committee individual set up at the DNR. And that time, I guess it was too progressive. It was about 2009 or 10. And the position kind of languished when there was seemed to be a really great need. So it's nice to learn emphasis on professional and attainable goals, and really making this climate action planning process proceed now. I know it's near and dear to a lot of the KHOI listeners. So any way we can help in spreading that good news is a role that
we feel like this is just the beginning. And so we know that we will come back frequently with updates and opportunities for feedback. We're looking at some a firm that provides like a multimodal type or a multifaceted type, not just one way to participate, but multiple formats. So this isn't our plan. This is the community's plan.
Okay. Mary, how do you feel responsibility of a sustainable director to address climate action in the 21st century now, compared to how it was 8 or 10 years ago?
Well, I think that, you know, so many different things have been happening that has raised awareness about sort of the trajectory, you know, that we collectively as a world really are headed down. And so things certainly, I think, have hit people's radar in different ways. From standpoint at Iowa State University, our students are very interested in this topic. They're continually, you know, intrigued on how they can get involved. And so to Susan's point, you know, the success of any initiative in a community completely lies on that involvement and that embracing, you know, of the community, and really feeling that ownership and understanding, you know, what their role can be and what their role is, you know, in bringing about the vision that you really want to see for the future. Yeah. So this sort of thing is near and dear to my heart. Our sustainable future is very near and dear to my heart. So I feel very strongly about this. But as Susan mentioned, you know, this is community's initiative, and we are so excited to bring in that perspective, that feedback, those experiences that all then will coalesce to what we are really looking forward to having as the plan that guides us.
Well, we'll sure look forward to that partnership. Anything else, Susan or Mary?
So I did want to bring up one thing, Pat. We have a very wonderful speaker talking about environmental justice, climate justice. We have a wonderful speaker coming to Iowa State University on March 1st. This is part of our Symposium on Sustainability effort this year. Oh. Dr. Robert Bollard, who is also known as the father of environmental justice and who is a graduate of Iowa State University, will be speaking, and he's going to be joining us virtually. So anyone can get on the lecture's website. We also have information about him coming to speak virtually on the LiveGreen website. Anyone can connect via a Zoom link anywhere around the world, actually, if you wanted to, and hear Dr. Bollard's comments about really the quest for environmental and climate justice. And this is going to be a phenomenal speaker. I've heard him before, and he actually recently was awarded the United Nations 2020 Champions of the Earth Achievement Award. So this is going to be a real delight, and I think a great message for all of our community to hear Dr. Bollard's words that really then takes us and motivates us to our next steps with our own climate justice initiatives and planning.
We'll include that PSA for March 1st. Thank you so much.
March 1st, 7 p.m.
7 p.m. Thank you so much. Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director. Susan Guasta, our Public Relations Officer for the City of Ames. Thank you so much. Have a good weekend. Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, Pat.
It's a pleasure. You too.
Okay, thank you.
Pat, I just want to say that I need to have Mary Secondhand Rose Rankin check my domicile for secondhand materials sometime, ready for spring house cleaning. And also remind listeners that on our Science Bites, we are actually running a series on the climate action, and we're looking hopefully next week at the greenhouse gas inventory study.
Coming up. Thank you. Hi, Anna.
Hello, everyone. Thank you, Pat. What a great local talk show today. And I am selfishly thanking Mary Rankin because on July 30th, I will be donating, volunteering, and selfishly shopping. I'll be moving to a new apartment, and I'm going to need a lot of stuff, so I'm looking forward to it.
All right. If you need any pickup trucks, just keep us in mind, Anna.
Yes, and I also remember, I just think of like back a year ago, because I remember Mike Murphy got here, and he volunteered for Stash the Trash, and I forgot about it. So I was like, oh, I forgot Stash the Trash, but Mike Murphy volunteered. So KHOI stepping up, and Eco Fair. I can't believe it's been a year. My goodness. That was an amazing event. It was like a 24-hour event for you, Pat. Well, so congratulations, Pat and Mary. That was amazing. So I'm looking forward to this.
Oh, Ursula Rudenberg, really, she oversaw the whole thing, the whole operation. It was all due to Ursula's guidance. Looking forward to it again. Absolutely.
Yeah, heart to heart. Thank you to Ursula, Pat, Mary, Mike, and Mike Murphy. Sorry, got a stall there for a second. Well, as you know, on Fridays each week, we get to spend time with Carol Pluckrose, who starts our week with a poem and message delivered from London to Ames. And usually we're trying to get her to come on, but she had a dentist appointment. So we're just going to go ahead and start with her heart-to-heart message, which is the following. The poem I chose for my last Sunday 11 a.m. poem was White Eyes by Mary Oliver. I love to return to Mary Oliver's poems and to weave them in and out of my choices. She is like a pulse, a rich vein of words and images that invite the reader to see the natural world through her eyes, to notice things I might otherwise miss. Her poetry slows me down, encourages me to attend the earth around me and its abundance. This past few months have been turbulent to say the least, and here I'm sitting writing in lockdown and the world outside is silent and still and snowy. It was thus last Sunday when I dived once more into Mary Oliver's rich tapestry. I was struck by the silence and stillness outside my window and the snow just beginning to settle. So in pausing for a moment to take it in, I was choosing to take my lead from Mary and not just to look, but to really see. Hence my choice of White Eyes, which suggested itself to reflect the day with love, Carol. So here's her poem, White Eyes by Mary Oliver, to help us get into the wintry state of mind, which we don't need much help if you just go outside for 2 seconds, but here we go. White Eyes. In winter, all the singing is in the tops of the trees where the wind bird, with his white eyes, shoves and pushes among the branches like any of us. He wants to go to sleep, but he's restless. He has an idea, and slowly it unfolds. From under his beating wings, as long as he stays awake, but his big, round music, after all, is too breathy to last. So it's over. In the pine crown, he makes his nest. He's done all he can. I don't know the name of this bird. I only imagine his glittering beak tucked in a white wing while the clouds, which he has summoned from the north, which he has taught to be mild and silent, thicken and begin to fall into the world below like stars or the feathers of some unimaginable bird that loves us, that is asleep now and silent, that has turned itself into snow. So I think that's a great heart-to-heart message. We have Mary Oliver and Mary Rankin today, all about snowy and white poems and about the environment. I mean, thank you, Carol Pluckrose, for your heart-to-heart message and poem. I'm just sorry that the listeners can't hear it in her lovely English accent. Now, I do have another heart-to-heart message, and let's see if we have time for it, because this is what's happening on Sunday, KHOI team. It's Valentine's Day. That's right. So I'm giving a big love message to all those out there who are celebrating Valentine's Day on Sunday. Excuse me. And speaking of love, I love being part of the community radio family, where all of our voices are welcome, a place where diversity is celebrated, and it's a platform for discussion, a source of information, and a place to make connections. And I certainly have made connections thanks to KHOI. So my heart-to-heart Valentine goes out to each of you. Now, also, I have a little plug. Let me just check the time here. Oh, I do. Okay. So guess what I did? I went to the FTT website. You know, that's where you order flowers. And they created 8 love characters to represent the types of love in every relationship. They actually didn't create it, but they said they did, but they didn't. But I'm going to use their blog on types of love to guide our heart-to-heart conversation about love. Now, as FTD is a flower delivery company, it isn't a surprise that they started the blog with, "One thing we find amazing is that you can enhance all types of love with the gift of flowers." So for all of those who need to prepare for Sunday, better get out to Hy-Vee to get your flowers and chocolates for your love. But I am going to talk about the type of love that is agape, which I think embraces KHOI. Agape is the highest level of love to offer. It's given without any expectations of receiving anything in return. Offering agape is a decision to spread love in any circumstances, including destructive situations. Agape is not a physical act, it's a feeling, but acts of self-love can elicit agape since self-monitoring leads to results. So we can do rummage rampage, we can do stash of trash. So what is a love catalyst? Your spirit brings creates bigger purpose than yourself and motivates you to pass kindness on to others. So how do we show agape? And this is for the listeners, for our heart-to-heart message. Dedicate your life to improving the lives of others. Again, dedicate your time to volunteering for Stash the Trash. Stay conscious of your actions for the good of humankind. Go to Rummage Rampage. Donate, shop, and volunteer. Offer your time and charity to somebody in need. You can do that by going to a lecture or giving someone some toffees. Thank you, Pat. Bonus, start a random act of kindness calendar, which you can do at KHOI. So back to you, Pat. That is my heart-to-heart message because it is time for me to split on this Friday.
Thank you so much, Anna Banana.
Local Talk airs at 7 a.m. and 5 p.m. on Friday at KHOI-FM. And remember to support this station financially when you go to the website, khoifm.org, and find the yellow donate button.
And remember that you can hear this program online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. Yes, tell your friends far and wide, KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. This program is engineered by Mike Murphy. Thank you, Michael. Thank you, Local Talk producers Ursula Rundberg and Lynn Carey. And thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday report. And thanks to our guests, Kay Hahn, Susan Guiazda, Mary Rankin. And thank you, Mike Metz and Anna Magnuson. I have been your host, Pat Schlarbaum.
Theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from the CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other artists you heard was Kay Hans with Chinese New Year. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! Remember, you, the listener, who makes KHOI meaningful and possible. So thank you for listening and
see you again on the radio.